Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White, all the way up in sunny Toronto, Canada. How is it going up there right now, man? You got your first place Blue Jays headed into the break. Of course, the Red Sox are scorching hot and starting to nip on their tails a little bit. How you feeling heading into the second half up there in Toronto?
It's good. There's optimism, which is a dangerous thing. If you're a Leafs fan, you know what can happen when you have optimism. But people are talking, walking the dog, and a lot of people have Blue Jay hats on. So it's a lot of optimism in the city. A lot of optimism,
and had a pretty good draft. We're going to talk a little bit about MLB draft, kind of walk through maybe the top 10, talk about some of those players. We're going to have FYPD rankings out next week. I'm not going to try to tip my hand too much, but I think you'll probably be able to read between the lines a little bit. I was at the draft myself, was also at the Futures game. Dylan, did you happen to watch the Futures game at all?
I watched, I think I watched most of it. Tell me your first person feelings.
Sure. So, every year we go to the Futures game. It's me, JJ, and some other coworkers. But JJ and I have this tradition dating back to my first Futures game with BA back in 2022, where we don't plot out all the home runs any longer, but we do keep a tally and make notes on the BP. So it's kind of the best opportunity for you to see all of the hitters in the Futures game kind of do their thing. I will say, Connor Griffin, incredibly impressive batting practice. Carson Bench, really impressive batting practice, actually. I think he maybe hit 6 out. The high was 8 until Carter Jensen came up. Kevin McGonigal, phenomenal BP. Like, as soon as it was like his first 2 rounds, he was kind of just like line drive, spreading out, you know, pro BP. Then he decided to backspin it, and he was just backspinning stuff up at the chop house, like actually hit some pretty long shots. And it's not easy for like a lefty to pull it there because the fence is very, very high. Almost think like a green monster, not quite that high, but high out in right field there at Truist. So that was pretty impressive. Carter Jensen had one of the most impressive rounds of BP I've ever seen at any level. Like, he hit 10 home runs on 15 pitches, and the other 5 were all like stung liners. There were like 3 or 4 line drives kind of spread around the field in his last round, and then he put one off the wall at one point that just missed an 11th home run. But like, he was cranking it, and it was legitimately loud power and backspin. He looked really good in BP to the point that I was like, kind of in on Carter Jensen now. Like, I've seen him hit, and I knew like the underlying data has been really good for a bunch of years, but to see it in person and just see like how easy it was for him to sort of like clobber some homers in a big league ballpark and like kind of all fields too. That was really impressive. Raw power wise, Connor Griffin and Briseño. Had almost hit one out of the stadium. Like over on the side of the chop house, there's like this iron sort of like rafters structure. He hit it over that. Like it bounced off the back of it. It was just almost out of this, like another 20 feet. It's out of the stadium. He hit some major shots. Montez like gets under everything so much that it's like these really high liners that you like kind of don't know if they're going to leave or not. Where like Briseño, they're kind of like rockets. Nice. Yeah. So that's always a fun take. It's probably my favorite part of the futures game and it's not televised, but I think just seeing all those guys taking BP on a big league field and just kind of counting homers. The only guy that did not hit a homer, even Enrique Bradfield did hit one out. The only guy that didn't hit a homer was Brady Montgomery. So make of that what you will.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I thought overall it was a pretty solid game. Got a nice homer from Josue DePaula, which was a highlight of that one. JJ Weatherholt made contact with a couple of nice balls. I thought Jonah Tong looked really, really good on the mound. J.R. Richie looked pretty good to start the game. Messick ripped off some really nice changeups. We didn't get 100 miles per hour from anybody. I think the closest anyone came was George Klassen. But a good game, you know. And I think for a lot of people, it's fun to see a lot of these guys on a well-produced television broadcast in a big league park. And then on top of it, you get some Statcast data. So, you know, for all those that are diving a little bit on the data, you get a better feel for at least the pitchers in particular, what they're doing, what their shapes are like, what they're capable of. Hitters a little harder, but you'll get some nice shots. I think, as I said, Weatherholt had maybe like a 106. I think it was a 106 EV on that double and the bottom of the first, and then later had a ball that was like maybe 101, 102. It was like a line out. So showed a little power there. It's an interesting player for sure. And then of course, we have our reception with, all the future game, you know, participants at the prospect pad. So we got a good showing there. I think most of the players pretty much showed up, and, you know, got to chat, have some interesting conversations. I grab pitch grips and some explanations on cues from all the pitchers in the futures game at stop by. So going to have some articles with some grips and some breakdowns of arsenals, et cetera. So,
that'd be great.
It was a productive time. And then the draft is the draft. How about you? Any other fantasy baseball element, type stuff you want to talk about? I know it's been the down period here, but we haven't recorded in a couple of weeks. So I wasn't sure if there's anything that's top of mind.
Not really. The most exciting part was the futures game. All those highlights you're talking about. I liked Jonah Tong snapped off a pretty nice curveball. I think it was to Harry Ford. That was pretty nice. I was curious about you, Savage, only facing one batter. Was that kind of by design or...
I think it was just more or less like every year there's a pitcher like this in the futures game. And I think it's just sort of like, you're going to get out there, you're going to get the pitch, but we got other guys, we got to pitch. And all the Braves guys like Hogan Harris was going to get an inning, like stuff like that. So I think right. Just in order to get through everybody, they had to do that, you know, certainly would have been nice if he stayed in a little longer, but it is what it is. Every year there was somebody like that. I know a few years ago, like in LA, it was like Zulueta came in and threw like one batter and then was out after it got retired one guy and then was out after that. And there was somebody the last 2 years, it was kind of the same thing. So I think it's just maybe they actually draw straws and there's like somebody who draws the short straw and only gets to go one or two at bats. So.
Right, right. Yeah. No, it was good. It's, I mean, you know, you watch minor league games, but it's good to see kind of like you watch minor league games for a few players, and then it's good to see them all kind of on the same stage, and you can see kind of their sizes. Like Briseño is like just a monster, even beside some of the other monsters, and like Parker Messick's a big boy and stuff. You can just kind of see relative sizes and
not very tall, but right. A big guy. He's probably only maybe 5'11". But
exactly. So it's good to see them all kind of like in context with each other. So that was nice. And that led right into the draft, which was
on Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we headed over there Sunday evening. It was an interesting draft because I don't think there was any clear-cut 1-1 pick up to like a half hour before. And that's kind of when like the Willits information started to leak in a little bit. But there were some fireworks and some, you know, uncertainty up there at the top. And we had heard a rumor that Bremner could go too. That ends up happening. So that kind of shifts the board down. And, you know, you end up with Cade Anderson falling to 3. And I mean, I think if you asked pretty much anybody, like in the baseball world, what would be the best possible landing spot for Cade Anderson be in the top 10? And it was always Seattle, right? Excellent pitching development. I'm pretty excited about Anderson and what he can do, you know, with their velocity camps and some of the other stuff. We've seen pitchability guys go there before that had above average stuff, Gilbert, Kirby, to a lesser extent, Wu. And we've seen them make major transformations. So they've done so well in this college pitching bucket of developing these guys. And this is a lefty with advanced pitchability who can handle innings, who can get deep into games, who's pitched in the most competitive environment in amateur baseball, consistently gotten outs, had the ball in the biggest games. You know, a guy like this, I think the biggest question is just there was an elbow surgery years ago. So, all right, is there maybe some risk? I think we take on that risk with any pitcher that we draft, right? So I'm pretty excited about Cade Anderson because I think the combination of just the player and then the dev and org fit are really, really good. And some of these guys in this rotation are going to get traded over the next couple of years. And the track record on college starters has been excellent in the last few drafts in terms of them sort of jettisoning up to the majors pretty quickly. So I'm in on Anderson. Willits goes 1, which I don't think was a total shock to us. We had heard that as a potential option. I do a stupid mock that I don't share publicly, but share it like internally with some of my friends. I had Willits 1. I had Anderson 2. I didn't think the Angels would pass on Anderson, but they did. You know, Willits, switch hitter, on base machine, really good contact. So that screams to me that like Robo Scout is going to probably like Eli Willits quite a bit. He's also extremely young.
Young, yeah.
He's the youngest number one overall pick in history. He is the age of juniors in high school. I mean, his birthday, he doesn't turn 18 years old until the 9th of December. All right. So he's going to be younger than a lot of high school players in the 2026 class. All right. So we'll keep that in perspective. I think my issue is I don't think he's a runner. I don't think there was a ton of power projection here that, you know, like the high end is like a Jacob Wilson, right? Is that like the hit tool super advanced and he's switch. He's 6'1", 180. So like you're not dealing with like a Madrigal and he's switch hitter as well. So he's unique in that sense. I mean, like, it stinks because like the best switch hitting contact first player of the last generation no longer plays professional baseball because of some things that he did off the field that were disgusting. But like that kind of profile, right? Like it's a switch hitter with contact and you're like, hey, if he can get a little stronger and he can find 45 power and some decent angles, maybe there's 15 to or more homers here. It's probably more like 10 to 12 with some stolen bases, but probably not like 30. It's probably more like 15 to 18 kind of a number, but a really good batting average and like, you know, a strikeout to walk ratio that's even or slightly tipping in the walk, area over the strikeouts. Like it's a really advanced hit tool. It's going to get 7s. So if you're into that kind of player, by all means, go in on Willits. I guess what I'm trying to say though is like in a class where there's a lot of players who are very, very close together here in the top 10, Dylan, I'm a little bit I'm a little bit more apprehensive to like take Willits where he was drafted. I don't know if that's reasonable or not.
Do you, since the complex leagues are kind of winding down, do you think we'll see any high school like prep guys play, make their debut this year? And if not, will we, how much information do you think we'll get from like bridge league stuff? Or
I think it's more likely to be college hitters in full season ball. I mean, there's a chance that Willits signs and gets assigned to low A Palm Beach because they're still playing games. Mm-hmm. He's such an advanced hit tool that like, he's not going to get the bat knocked out of his hands. So it's not going to be like all that different from, what is it, Andrew Salas? I want to make sure I get my Salas right. Like Andrew Salas, where like early on the model loved him because he was making contact. He was getting on base. He was, you know, he's going to do that. I think he's a better player than Salas. He's a better hitter than Salas. So like, I think that's all going to probably play, that they could assign him to Palm Beach. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility that we do see him at Palm Beach. Their complex facility is also right there. Mm. So it sort of makes sense, right? Where like a team like Miami or St. Louis or some of these teams that have like a full season affiliate in Florida right next to their complex, I think those guys are more likely to probably see some full season time.
Nice.
It wouldn't shock me if Willits never plays in the complex. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, that he just never plays in the complex whatsoever. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's an interesting player. I think that you can kind of, I was going to say skin the cat, but that's not very appropriate. Who's skinning cats, right? It's kind of a weird expression, isn't it? But I think you can kind of slice this however you want, right? Like, maybe you are into the Willits type and you like the hit tool and you like the age and you're like, you know, he's 6'1". Maybe there's more power here. Guys like you, Jeff, missed on Jacob Wilson in a big way, you know? So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility to kind of view it that way. We'll talk quickly on Tyler Bremner. It's interesting pitch traits. Like, his fastball playing is way better than I thought it was going to be. And I don't know how juiced those TrackMan devices are out in the West Coast, but it's not a bad fastball. It's probably like it's at least a plus changeup. Maybe it's a 70. We get 70 changeups on the amateur side that don't play like that when they come to the pro ranks. So we'll be conservative and put a 60 on it. We got to see what he does with that slider. He throws it pretty hard. He doesn't move a whole lot. More power, more movement are going to matter. Are the Angels going to be the team to do that? I don't know. He's probably going to get up to the big leagues really quick. So, you know, if you value that, then I don't think Bremner is a bad pick. I think what's going to happen with Bremner is he's going to drop outside of the top 10 in a lot of FYPDs, Dylan. Mm-hmm. And someone's going to get him at like 13 and he's going to pitch his way to the big leagues, and you're then going to have like a nice little trade bait, especially if he's good in Rocket City, because we know he's going to go to Rocket City. He's probably not going to pitch this year, but he's either going to the big leagues or he's going to Rocket City to start next year. I don't think they're going to do the Tri-City thing. He's too good of a prospect. They paid him way too much money. More than likely. I don't think he's signed yet. But so, you know, Bremner to me, probably not a top 10 FYPD guy. If he landed in Seattle, he probably is. If he lands in Pittsburgh, he probably is. You're going to like this. If he landed, and I don't think the Blue Jays were looking at him, but if he landed in Toronto, I'm kind of in. If he lands with Chicago, I'm kind of in. Like, there's a few good landing spots, because like Bannister in Chicago has done some really good things with their pitching. So it's going to come down to fit with a lot of these guys, you know? And yeah, so we can keep talking through it, right? We talked through some Bremner here. Let's get to Ethan Holiday. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break, Dylan. What do you say?
Let's do it. Yes.
We'll be right back.
Whenever we need to hire someone at Baseball America, we know who we need. Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Why do we use Indeed at Baseball America? Because it gets our position in front of qualified candidates. And it also allows us to do everything we need to make a hire, all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In this minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by doing so, you're supporting our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on our podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
All right. We are back. We're talking MLB draft. We're probably just going to walk through the top 10, have some commentary on some of the players. I've done a lot of digging over the last 2 weeks. I spent a lot of time watching draft video on Synergy, talking to people who are smarter than I am, who work in the game, getting their opinions, asking them, hey, remove defense from this as much as you can. Who do you think is the best, like, of these prep middle infielders? Shortstop is a debatable term with some of these guys. But of these prep middle infielders, how are we ranking them out? And I've gotten some different, I've gotten a lot of different feedback on that. I've had some people who their last guy in this group is the first guy for other people. So it is truly a pick 'em. This is going to be a fun draft. But
it's going to be fun, yeah.
Ethan Holiday, I think, has something really going for him. And that is the combination of big power, plus power, maybe plus raw. He's going to be playing in Colorado. Colorado heals a lot of ills. He's going to get on base. He's going to hit for some power. It's not going to be Jackson's hit tool. It's going to be a lot more power than Jackson. He's not going to move as well. There's more defensive risk here. I think third base is optimistic. Pessimistic, he's a first baseman. Okay. So he's more like Matt. He's built like Matt. He looks like Matt. He plays like Matt. So I think he's a good player. I think this, you know, if you have Holiday above Willits, I think that's pretty reasonable. And like we had that ranking. There's a lot of evaluators that have that ranking. And I think based on fit, like Colorado has not been the best, but they do stick with their guys and they get their guys that they believe in up to the big leagues quick. So it might take a couple of years, but you know, he's going to hit in great environments with a lot of power and has access to more resources than probably just about any player in this draft. I don't know what your thoughts are on Ethan Holiday. It is a power bat, power and on base. It's a very different player from Jackson.
Yeah, I think I'm if he wasn't in Coors, I would be much lower.
Yeah.
It's everything you said. It's Coors heals ills. If his hit tool is not great, you know, that'll bring if he's a 200 hitter in Coors, you know, it's like that turns into 260. So like 230 overall. So like it really helps the hit tool. Matt Holiday, bloodlines, just even the Colorado thing the organization is going to, you know, roll out the red carpet for him and all that. So it's going to be, it's the best landing spot you could ask for him. So that really kind of softens the flaws that
the risk
I have. Yeah, exactly. So, I like him. I don't know where I take him. It's kind of like a Jack Caglione thing for me where it's like, I get the positives for sure, but then like the negatives.
Better swing decisions. And it might be better angles too.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, he's going to punch. Like he's probably going to run it may not be a 30, but it's going to be like high 20s, but he's going to get on base and he's going to hit homers. You know, there's a lot of players like that that are successful. I think you got to either have power or speed or a good enough combination of like power, speed, hit to be truly fantasy relevant year after year after year, you know, like, the kind of skills that don't necessarily slump, where I think you get that with some of the hit tool guys. So it's interesting though. I mean, I think this is just once again hammering home, and this is like you can start drinking the number of times I've been saying this is a pick'em, a toss-up, you know, pick your expression and take a shot every time I say it. But it's truly like the more digging I do in this class, the more I come away confused as to how this board should shake out. Like truly, like I think there's so many different, like this is a choose your own adventure book. I don't know if the younger crowd is familiar with those, but we go to the library and like you pick a page and be like, all right, you pick this, you got to jump ahead to this page. And like, you could pick wrong and die. It wasn't great. And you're starting the book over, you know? All right, well, let's jump on to number 5, Liam Doyle. High energy lefty, arguably the best fastball in the class. You've seen the data, Dylan. It's excellent, excellent plane, excellent velocity. It's like 97, 98 from a lefty, which is like 100 miles an hour for righty. You just don't see that kind of lefty velocity. Funky slot. He threw the fastball like 75% of the time this year. I mean, he dominated in the SEC with a fastball. Tells you like the ilk of that pitch, the quality of that pitch. There are some major question marks regarding like what the quality breaking balls are here. He throws hard though, and he's willing to take stuff on. He's a hard worker, kind of a nut. Adding a better breaking ball wouldn't shock me. He spent each college season at a different college. Went to Coastal Carolina, mid-major, transfers into the SEC with Ole Miss. Ole Miss, kind of a messy situation. Transfers to Tennessee, which is obviously was the defending champion when he went in. One of the best programs in college baseball. And he was their ace. He was every bit the ace that he needed to be. We'll say the splitter, man. There's some debate between scouts and analysts. The analysts really like the splitter. The numbers were pretty good against it. He didn't throw it a ton. It's an interesting pitch. All the metrics in terms of it playing, in terms of plane versus the fastball plane, look really good. So there might be two, like, there's a plus-plus pitch here and like maybe an above-average splitter. And then, you know, he gets an average breaking ball, especially as a lefty. It might be game over. This might be the best pitcher in the draft. It might be the best player in the draft. But there is some risk in terms of what the pitch mix is and where it goes from here. I wouldn't say the Cardinals are a bad fit, but it's not the fit of some of these other orgs that we talked about. Like, I think that things are progressing nicely under Chaim Bloom, and it's going to be his first full year next year. They're going to be more likely to be more progressive, bring in some things. He's a guy that worked out at Cressy. He's worked out at different places. He's going to seek out information. And I think we'll get to where he needs to be. So he's an interesting one. There's some relief risk here, though, Dylan, for sure, 100%.
So I know, okay, let me ask this hypothetical question. Put you on the hot seat. What if the Mariners took Doyle and the Cardinals took Cade Anderson? How would that swap your...
I think I would be 100% in on Doyle. I might even have him as like the number one player in the class. Just because of the Mariners' reputation and what they've done. And I think it's close enough. Like the stuff metrics are probably going to like Doyle more. Simply because of how much he uses the fastball and how well that fastball is going to grade out. I don't think it would hurt Anderson as much as it maybe hurts Doyle a little bit. That makes sense. Like I think Anderson's still like top three in the class, even if Doyle is that, you know, maybe just kind of swap how they're ranked a little bit. Doyle's still going to be really high for me. It's just the Seattle boost with Doyle would have put him way over the top. You know, I think that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I think the college pitching is honestly like, we may look back and be like, all right, I guess this is the year to draft pitchers up top. Like it kind of feels that way. And kind of adding on to that, I don't know if you had any more Doyle questions or we can move on to Seth Hernandez at six.
I was tracking sort of the college stats as we go and trying to do major league equivalencies, and Doyle and Cade Anderson were basically consistently at the top. So
yeah,
no questions from me why they're at the top.
Yeah. And I think both of these guys, I think you can argue could have gone ahead of Hagen Smith last year. I think Smith in college is maybe a little bit better. Anderson's arsenal is more well-rounded. And Doyle like kind of has similar traits to Hagen Smith, and Smith just had the better slider. It was a wicked slider, but that thing is backed up in pro ball, you know? So like hindsight being 2020 now, I'm like, these guys weren't that far off from Hagen Smith. At the time though, we considered Hagen Smith a better prospect. He's just backed up a little bit this year. I don't know if it's physical or what, because a lot of their other pitchers been pretty good, though I guess Noah Schultz is up for debate there, so maybe I shouldn't give Bannister too much credit. I don't know. Seth Hernandez, I think this is a really interesting one because you're talking about a high school kid, right-hander, who sits high 90s, who touches triple digits, you know, sits more like mid 90s, like 97, 98, but he can't ramp it up to 100. The secondaries are really good. And I think one of the things that gets underrated with him is it's really advanced pitch ability. Like his changeup is really good right now, which is going to neutralize left-handed hitters, which is going to be a big part of the lineups. You know, he's throwing a curveball. It gets a ton of spin. He's got a harder slider that'll show a little bit. So like there's four pitches here. There's feel for spin. There's velocity. There's pitchability and strike throwing. It's a prep pitcher. It's a prep righty who throws hard. So like you're probably going to bake in an injury on the road to the big leagues. Like these guys, I mean, look at Andrew Painter, right? Painter effectively was, you know, we looked like he was going to be 1 year in the minors and then in the big leagues the next year. Injury, misses two seasons, right? 23, 24. Back in 25, he's still not up in the big leagues. It could happen this year. It probably will. But you're looking 4 years minimum from draft to starting with high school pitchers. Even the best ones don't get up there that fast. So I think you got to bake that in a little bit. I also think that you can make a case that this might be the most talented prospect in the draft, which is really interesting because you're talking about a lot of pitchers here at the top, you know, with Anderson and Doyle and Hernandez and Bremner, we kind of talked through, I don't necessarily view him in that same category, but it's tough to take a prep pitcher that like really high in FYPDs. Hernandez might kind of be the one to take high. And these guys haven't had a bad track record. We've seen a lot of good prep arms come up the last few years and be valuable prospects in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's tough for me to take a high school pitcher in an FYPD, especially if I have like a top five pick. It's like it's hard for me to kind of give up that draft capital for that, for all the reasons you said, having to wait a long time, higher risk of injury probably. So it's tough, but I totally understand it as a, you know, a real life club. Then yeah, I think I, you know, I can wait. But
I think though in fantasy this year that there's a lot of people chasing fool's gold around some of these hitters, and I don't know. I think this might be the rare occurrence you kind of take this guy. It's like taking Hunter Green, right? You took Hunter Green out of high school and you're going to have to hold for a few years, but the value is going to be there because he's going to be a top 100 guy. Even on fantasy lists, he's probably going to get on the back end. Some people might avoid the profile entirely because he's a hard throwing high school right-hander. I think that's foolish. I honestly think this is a talent that's worth chasing in a bad draft. Like, I love Avar Arquette. I will take Avar Arquette over Seth Hernandez. That's the number 7 pick here. Marlins. When we look, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago. When we look at the best combination of angles and power and swing decisions and contact in the class and performance against a variety of pitch types, I think Arquette's the best hitter in the draft. And there were hitting coordinators that felt the same way, you know, that got called into some of those meetings and start digging in. He's a shortstop. Maybe he ends up as a third baseman. If he's a third baseman, he's going to be a plus third baseman. He's still kind of projectable. He's twitchy. He's a good athlete. He's going to run a little bit. I think he's the only guy in this college hitting class that had a chance of going top 10 last year. Because I do think he's better than Christian Moore is. And I think he's better than Braden Montgomery. So, you know, yeah, why did he go 7? I don't know. Why did Connor Griffin go 9 last year? You know, like, it's just kind of how things shake out, where people have players, what they like, what the numbers are like. He's a really interesting player, you know, and I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to hit for power. I'm less concerned about the Marlins because I think their development has really advanced under this new regime. So I'm less apprehensive to take a Marlins hitter because I know the type of work they're doing off the field is progressive. They're heavily data driven. And there's nobody to block them. I mean, like, who's in Ava Arquette's way? Like, I think it's not unreasonable. I think I said this to you before the top of the show, or I said it to one of my other colleagues when we were talking about the FYPD stuff. He could be their Marlins best hitter in 2027. And that's like not going to shock me. It's almost an expectation. So I think when we've seen the way that college hitters have performed, this is a guy that's on the same class as the guys who went in last year's draft. A lot of guys are up in the big leagues. Most of the guys that are playing have been pretty productive. Even Charlie Condon started to look a little better. He's dealt with some injuries. Give him a mulligan. So and this guy's more athletic, you know? So I'm kind of in on Arquette. I think this is a really interesting FYPD pick. I don't think it's crazy if you had him 1, you know, 2, 3, 4. I think he's probably somewhere in that range. I know you've probably looked at some of Arquette's data and you were around when I wrote that article. So I don't know what your thoughts are on old Ava Arquette. Baseball, yeah. Gumby is what Mark Chiarelli calls him.
I think he's probably the best college hitter. Like that it's shortstop. I have looked at the numbers. So like, yeah, there's a lot of power in there, good angles, good performance. I like it. He's the best college hitter. So if you want safety, if you want proximity, then you know, he's at the top of your board.
I think he's got more upside than a lot of these guys. Like, I honestly think he probably has more upside than Holiday or Willits of the hitters that we've spoken about. Like, I think there's probably more upside there. just in terms of the combination of like all the skills from a fantasy perspective. Like, you know, there's maybe some things that make Eli Willett's a better player overall, and he's so young. It's just, it's whether he develops impact or not is a question. And I think if you're drafting him in fantasy, it's a risk that you have to be willing to take that maybe the power doesn't come. And then like, what kind of a stat line is it?
Profile,
is it
then, yeah.
Is it then just contact and on base ability? Sometimes those, like, Chase Mydroth hasn't been great in the big leagues. He's been a better defender, frankly, which is shocking. I never expected him to play short, let alone an above average short in the big leagues. But he's been a below average hitter, you know, like and he had as good a skills as you're going to see. Now, Willits is bigger. Willits is twitchier. Willits should be a better player. So it's not, I think he's going to be an above average hitter, but I don't know. Like, I think there's a chance that Arquette is a better hitter than he is. It's just, he wasn't as developed as quickly. So, you know, you can go one way or the other on that one. Next one, we're talking Jays, Dylan. Some people think he's the best hitter in the class. That would be JoJo Parker or Joseph Parker, if you want to be polite with it. Little bit older in terms of the age at the draft with JoJo. He is like a year and a half older than Eli Willits, but really advanced hit tool. Good enough body, 6'2", 200 pounds. So he's pretty maxed out. I don't know how much more power there is to come, but it's probably above average power. The EVs are pretty good. He could be a really advanced hitter. I think it kind of falls into like the Colt Emerson, Aiden Miller kind of bucket. I don't know if he's as good as Emerson or Miller, but kind of a similar player, you know? So if you're into those kind of guys, then I think JoJo makes a lot of sense. I think he's probably going to rank among the top. I'll have him above Willits. I'll say that. I don't know if I'd have him above Holiday. I think that's a pick'em, just because Holiday is more power, right? And it's the on-base skills and all that sort of stuff. And he's bigger. So, but, you know, if you had Parker over Holiday, I don't think that's crazy. They're kind of in that same sort of tier. I don't know. It was one of my favorite picks in the first round. I mean, I thought it was good value. We had heard him rumored as high as three to the Mariners. As I said, you know, I think there's some people that could prefer Parker to Holiday. You know, he did go ahead of Carlson and Gavin Fine and, you know, some of these other guys. So I don't know what your take is on old JoJo Parker.
I like it. I kind of wanted the Jays to take Jamie Arnold. I just wanted to see what Arnold would be in their pitching development.
Yeah.
So it was a bit, not a disappointment, but I was like, I could have seen what Arnold would have been in the Jays.
Dylan, I could have told you they were always going hitter. He was in the mix, but they were always going hitter.
Nice. So yeah, no, I like it. I like the hit power, you know, 55-55 or 60-55 or whatever. It's like, it's a good combination. So, I mean, this is not a comp in any way, but it's just like kind of like a Cam Smith, good hit, good power. I like it. So I'm interested to see what he's going to do in the organization.
Yeah. 100%. He's kind of exciting. All right. We're rolling through the top 10 here. Steele Hall. You will get as like conflicting opinions on Steele Hall at about as extreme of a rate as you can get. Some people think this is the best player for fantasy in the class. The comp in terms of the athlete, if it all clicks, is Trey Turner. This guy is going to stick a shortstop, phenomenal runner. There's power. He is not the biggest guy. He is the best tester. He is the highest upside player in this draft. If anybody is going to go full on Connor Griffin, it's ironic because he's the 9th pick, but anybody goes full on Connor Griffin next year, it's going to be Steele Hall. There's questions about the hit tool. And they're reasonable questions, frankly. Contact isn't great. Swing decisions aren't awesome. There's power and there's angles. And there is some game performance based on that. So you got 8 months, though. We've seen since the pandemic, a lot of these prep players get shut down or play very sparingly. And then they have a lot of development time. And especially with the way that the complex league has been moved up, you're now talking Bridge League. You're talking October, November, maybe December hitting camps. You're talking January potentially being back for hitting camps and then playing all the way through March before you even see backfield games in late March, second half of March. All of a sudden you start playing some games. A lot of these guys have like 8 months, like, right? They get drafted. They got all the August, September, October, November, December, you know, January, February. And like, they're not playing games until late March. So we're talking 8 months where they have time behind the scenes without it showing up on their baseball card, without it showing up on their MLB profile page. They can go out there and they can struggle and they can figure things out. And I think that's why a lot of these guys that have hit tool or swing concern questions who are also good athletes, we've seen be really good players almost out the chute, you know? And I think, you know, certainly a guy like Hall falls into that category. And I mean, he went 9. I mean, he went before Billy Carson. He went before Gavin Fine. And I think he's another super young guy, you know, just turns 18 in a week. So he was a reclass as well. Obviously would have been one of the older players in next year's class, but still 17 at the time of the draft. Super young, not Eli Willett's young, but super young. So it's pretty interesting. I am a very,
you're high on him.
I'm very in on Steel Hall. I think it's worth the risk to take the shot because guys with skills like this year after year after year consistently are the guys that I regret not being higher on. You know, and in a class like this where none of these guys are great, I don't know. This might be the best prep player. If you want to do it, just got to have some stones to do it because you will take on some risk. But, you know, I hear risk and it's the Spider-Man meme. It's just me and risk pointing at each other. I love some good risk on guys like this. But I think it's, you know, FYPD, man, you should be trying to hit some homers. I think especially up top. So, you know, you can take your line drive swings up at the top with, you know, some of the Kate Anderson or Doyle or someone like that. But I think when you start to get into the upside, I think Steel Hall is the most exciting name to talk about. We'll wrap this up. We're gonna have Carlos Collazo on next week. We're gonna have FYP rankings out next week. I'm gonna save some of the goodies for that. Some of my rankings are gonna conflict with Carlos' stuff. We'll have some debates on that, or at least just talk through it and say debates. Or talking through reasonable minds can differ type of stuff. So that'll be fun. But the last name, Billy Carlson. I've gotten Mason Wynn comps on him. And I think a lot of it is because the shortstop defense is advanced. It's an excellent arm. He was a two-way guy who pitched in high school, played with Seth Hernandez on that team. Brady Ebel was on that team as well. Who's somebody we won't discuss today, but is FYPD relevant for sure. There's some questions on how much he's going to hit in the swing. I think he could get there. You know, I think he's going to need some work like Wynn. It might take a couple years for the swing changes and all that work to take. I know he's got a well-known swing coach I believe he's working with as well. So, you know, we'll see what direction it goes. He's a pretty good athlete. He's a really good shortstop. I don't think there's high-end offensive upside here, though. As I said, like Mason Wynn is a solid player, a pretty good fantasy player, right? But, you know, like the numbers are, it's kind of a leadoff profile. Like, you know, you're hoping that there's more in the tank here with Wynn in terms of home runs and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, he's a league average-ish hitter that doesn't strike out a ton, doesn't kill you in batting average, doesn't really help you in stolen bases or power. right? And a lot of his value is derived from his glove. So I think it's kind of a similar player, you know, in terms of where it's going. But not altogether like a player you want to totally write off. I just think it's probably in a 15-team league, it's probably back end of the first round. Like the last couple of picks is where I think Carlson probably comes off the board. I just think there's maybe some better names and maybe a few better names behind him that we're not going to talk today, but we'll talk on those next week. All right, Dylan.
Teaser. I like it.
Yeah, we ran through 45 minutes, most of it on the draft and the top 10 and kind of talking through some of those players and different talents, getting familiar. We're going to ramp it up next week. We'll have the FYPD rankings and we'll have Carlos Collazo on. This podcast will drop probably a day earlier though, just because, you know, scheduling and traveling and all that sort of stuff. It's a hectic couple of weeks. But for Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.